Hi, this is Smriti Kirvanandan, your host for Health Forward Podcast. One of the most important things you can do for yourself is to take care of your health. Your road to discovering an all-inclusive, empathetic, and innovative healthcare ecosystem starts right now.
In this episode, we're about to navigate the electric revolution on wheels. I'm with Michael Battaglia, the Chief Operating Officer of Blink Charging. We delve into the transformative shift towards electric vehicles, exploring how this moment isn't just about embracing the future of transportation, but it's also a vital prescription for public health. Join us as we uncover the electrifying reasons why the transition from conventional automobiles to EVs is a crucial catalyst for cleaner air, reduced emissions, and an overall healthier planet. Mike, welcome to Health Forward. Such a pleasure to have you here.
Thank you, Simi. It's great to be here.
Mike, share with us your journey to this role where you're at with Blink Charging.
Yeah, in the spirit of you never know where you're going to end up, it's at least I find it somewhat interesting. I was one of those few people who, as early as high school, knew that I wanted to be in the car business, some involvement in the automotive industry. So I worked at car dealerships in high school and in college, and then out of college, I went to work for Toyota on the corporate side. Then on the retail side, I spent a few years in consumer electronics working for a company that made portable hard drives. Mm-hmm. And then I spent almost 15 years with J.D. Power in a variety of roles within their automotive division. So what really got me to this role is as we were meeting with automotive clients across the industry, it almost didn't matter what topic we were going to meet with them on. They always wanted to bring the conversation back to the electrification of the industry. So we could be going to talk to them about industry sales, and they want to talk about electrification. We could be talking to them about the customer experience, and they would want to talk about electrification. So I got to a point where I said, the industry's shifting this way. I'd love to try to figure out a way to get involved. And through, you know, series of events, I ended up at Blink.
Awesome. That's very interesting. There are a lot of people who would see the trends coming, but they really wouldn't catch it. And then 10 years later, it's basically the core of every conversation we're having, which is exactly where we are right now. So given the growing concerns about climate change, how does Blink Charging see its role in addressing the challenges associated with the transportation sector's carbon footprint?
So one of the best aspects about working for Blink is that Blink, in its entirety, in its existence, the company's mission is to do exactly this, right? It is, we often say that we are electrifying the future one charger at a time. And so our people all believe in every aspect of the company that every charging station that gets installed by Blink is facilitating and fostering and pushing forward the electric vehicle industry, which has all of the ancillary benefits that we talk about, the health benefits, the curtailment of emissions. And I could kind of go on and on about this, but the great part about working for the company is that inherently we are furthering that mission.
You know, it's interesting. I know people who are listening to a healthcare podcast are wondering, why am I speaking to someone in the automobile industry? I think personally, healthcare is everyone's business. And I think healthcare touches everyone, especially when it comes to automobile with the CO2 emissions and the public health crisis and the disease state, and especially in the United States. I think it's very critical that we bring different players to the table. But given the healthcare concerns, Michael, raised with carbon emissions and a shift to EVs, what benefits can healthcare systems see directly by moving to EVs? And have you conducted, from a Blink perspective, direct research with certain zip codes that are more belonging to a vulnerable population to showcase the correlation?
So I'm happy to report that one of our most important segments at the company is actually healthcare facilities. So we do a lot of work with different companies like Lehigh Valley Health, with Kaiser Permanente, with Cleveland Clinic. And these are all organizations that recognize that there are many benefits to installing charging stations and enabling electrification among their employees, among their visitors, et cetera, at their facilities. So, you know, the most obvious one is the fewer internal combustion engines that are visiting those facilities, the less pollution that is that exists and tailpipe emissions that exist in and around their facilities. But further to that, and this is kind of a big one for me, is pollution comes in a number of different forms, right? It comes in not just CO2 emissions, but it comes in noise and things like that, right? So think about people that live around those facilities. Think about people that live among highway corridors or in densely populated areas with lots of vehicles. Not only are we helping curb CO2 emissions, we're also curbing noise pollution. And that's something that I think is an ancillary benefit that people don't often think about. But I think once you do, it makes a lot of sense.
And that makes complete sense to me. So I'm also curious, and I'm very new to the industry of automobile myself, but what is the difference between Blink charging in their products and services versus, say, a Tesla charging station?
Yeah, so Blink is one of the unique things about Blink is that we are a completely vertically integrated company. And what that means in simple terms is that we provide products, services, software at every touch point of the electric vehicle ownership journey. So what that means is we manufacture our own charging stations that are powered by our own software. So that enables a seamless integration between the software, the hardware. It enables us to troubleshoot far more effectively and efficiently. And we provide the installation services. So whether it be a level 2 charging station or whether it be a DC fast charger, which a lot of people probably equate to like a Tesla supercharger, right? So we provide those same type of products. So our goal is to make this entire experience very, very easy for the consumer. And there's a number of different ways that that happens. Number one, unlike owning an internal combustion engine vehicle, you can charge this vehicle at home. And it's incredibly convenient to do so. And the statistics are that 80 to 85% of all the kilowatts that are going to get dispersed to an electric vehicle are going to happen at home. Mm-hmm. Then you have the balance that happens out in public. And we provide publicly accessible charging stations that have a number of different ways to pay. Can be credit card, can be mobile app. There's all kinds of things. So we provide all of these different products and services throughout the range. So when you are a driver and you become a Blink customer, you can have the confidence to know that the charger is going to work well, that Blink is overseeing it, that our network integrates seamlessly in this ecosystem.
It's interesting that you're covering a person's full ecosystem from the home to the office to the touch points on the road. So how does the tax benefits work for the people listening in terms of becoming more sustainable? Like, what's the incentive?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so there's a number of different incentives associated with owning an electric vehicle, right? Whether it be on the individual driver side or whether it be on the business side or the commercial side in terms of installing. So obviously there's a lot of tax benefits and credits associated with purchasing an electric vehicle. I think those are fairly well known. But on the commercial side, in terms of installing the infrastructure, there's a 30% federal tax credit that comes with the installation of a charging station. So if you spend $10,000 on an EV infrastructure project, mm-hmm. 30% of that is offset by a federal tax credit. So number one, so that's very beneficial. The second is that there are a number of utility company rebates that are available to organizations, properties, what have you, for EV infrastructure. So it may cover what we call the infrastructure portion, which is literally running the pipe and the wire and that type of thing, any kind of electrical panel upgrades. There's rebate money that can be applied to that. And then there's also rebate money available for the charger itself. And sometimes you can stack these incentives and you can do all kinds of different things to significantly offset the cost of installing this infrastructure, and in some cases, completely offset it. Then a third one is there are a number of industry, state level, federal level grant programs that are available to install EV infrastructure as well. The most well known of which is the Volkswagen Mitigation Fund, which was available throughout the 50 states and provided money to install EV charging infrastructure.
And that's good to know. And also it's very encouraging that for us to be making changes in our individual homes and society, we do have great perks, especially for businesses as well. That brings me to my next question. Within the healthcare systems, and back to healthcare folks, I know healthcare systems providers have something called the LEED, LEED certification, which are points they collect towards the ESG goals. Mike, elaborate to us, how does this work? And for providers and payers who are listening to this, how do we encourage them to become more sustainable by doing this?
Yeah, so Simi, I'm not an expert on LEED, but I can provide some guidance. So the premise of LEED is to encourage facilities, buildings specifically, to implement different efficiency measures in order to decarbonize, right? So think of going from an incandescent light bulb to an LED, going to solar power, installing a heat pump versus other systems, things like that. So it all has to do with carbon emissions offset. And when you install an electric vehicle charging station on a property, when you charge that vehicle, the Blink Network records every single one of those charging sessions. And one of the things that we do in our platform, which again is unique, is we actually convert the kilowatt hours into estimated CO2 emission savings. So when it comes to LEED reporting, a property can actually just log onto the platform. They have that number right there and they can report that back, right? So it can go towards the scoring for LEED certification.
No, that makes complete sense to me. I think it's just a platform where people can take in on how much of CO2 emissions they've avoided and then, kind of tracking it up to how sustainable they're becoming in their terms of the ecosystem. I'll be very curious to also dig up information on how healthcare systems are tying up installing EV stations to their buildings. Michael, I know Blink Charging has reported an impressive 152% increase in revenue. What factors do you attribute to the substantial growth, and how does it align with the company's long-term goals?
Yeah, so it's a combination of things, as it always is. It's not just one factor. So certainly a driving force behind our performance is the industry growth. So we, especially in the last 3 years, we've started to see that what we call the hockey stick effect, which is electric vehicle adoption is starting to happen at scale. It's a meaningful percentage of the entire new vehicle industry. So, a couple examples of that. Last month, I believe the state of California approached or hit 25% of all new vehicles that were sold in the state were electric. Then we start to get to the broader, let's call it the rest of the United States. And as an industry, we're hovering right around 8%. And that keeps growing. So, one, it's obviously industry growth. But secondly, it is Blink's unique value proposition in the market. And what I mean by that is we provide multiple ways that a client can install EV chargers depending on what their goals and objectives are. So, number one, they can buy a charging station from us, they can install it themselves, they can own it. But a second one is what we call Blink owned and operated. And by the way, we love healthcare facilities for this. And it is where Blink will actually take on the expense of installing the charging station at the property. We own it, we operate it, we maintain it, we make sure that it's up and running on a consistent basis. And if the property's interested, we share revenue with them in that situation. We have a final model that is charging as a service, which is like a leasing, equipment leasing model. So the only point to this is simply that we get really, really positive feedback from the market and from our customers that they love this optionality and flexibility. So our goal is to try to say yes in every single situation that we're in where a customer has expressed interest in installing EV charging.
Now, I love that you have a very flexible model, but also at every example you've given me, it seems like you cover the complete customer experience, right? And I love that because I think that's a very important one for member retention, but also if it's a new charging system and they don't know how to handle it, you're basically covering it end to end, which I think is great, especially for hospital systems. Can you share insights into other strategic partnerships that Blink Charging has formed to further sustainability goals? And how do these partnerships contribute to the company's overall mission? I'm talking beyond healthcare, of course.
Yeah, so it's a very intensive industry in the sense that you're not just kind of providing a charging station. There's a whole host of things that need to happen in order to actually get one of these in the ground. So there's a ton of coordination that happens between Blink, local utility companies, and maybe most importantly, our installation partners, right, which are certified electricians that are well-versed in how to install, whether it be a level two or a DC fast charging station. So there is kind of an ecosystem of partnerships that need to come together in order to make sure that that the stations go in, they go in quickly, they go in where they're needed. So we really leverage a lot of different relationships in the industry in order to make these happen.
Yeah, it seems like you need to orchestrate and get some units and teams and everyone on the same table to really play the cards right. I'm also curious, Michael. I know that EVs have been out and about for quite some time, but do you see any challenges or pushback for people who've been in the traditional system to make that transition? And if so, what are they? And what would you say to see if they can come over that bump?
Yeah, so we don't see a lot of pushback. What we often see is customers approaching us and saying, "When should I do this?" So they recognize the need that this is coming. They often have employees or constituents that are saying to them, "Hey, you guys don't have a charging station?" And by the way, that's not just healthcare facilities. Think about hotels, right? Think about apartment buildings. I mean, people are making choices in the market based on whether or not there's EV infrastructure available there. So if I have two hotels in a city that I'm going to be visiting and they're comparable, and I own an electric car, and one of them has a charger and one of them doesn't, where am I going to stay? Right? I'm going to stay at the one that does. So for us, it's more about these discussions are what is the timing? What are you trying to accomplish? And what we often say is, start planning now. It doesn't mean you have to install now. It doesn't mean you have to spend the money now, but start planning now because the market's growing tremendously. There's good incentives out there, monies to offset costs, things like that. So start planning, see what your options are, and then you can decide when you want to move forward.
Basically, it sounds like it's happening. It's going to be the future of the way we live. So it's better to start adapting now than later. And I do see a lot of cars, especially Hyundai Motors, which is going to be sold on Amazon next year, which is also interesting and
Yeah,
exciting.
very, very cool. Yep.
Yeah, it's like, putting a car in the cart, that's going to be interesting. And they are going big on sustainability goals, and the new IONIQ 6 is huge on that. So it really is shifting towards that. And I think even the younger generation are becoming more sustainable in terms of not allowing plastic, in terms of not using certain products. So I think everyone is becoming conscious in their own way. But I think if the industry, such as the automobile, makes that bigger shift, then what it seems is like every other business has no other choice but to adapt. And that's really what I'm hearing. And obviously, there's an increase in demand for EV infrastructure. So how is Blink Charging planning to expand its network? And basically, how are you trying to scale at the same speed and also sustainably?
We have an affectionate saying at Blink that every parking spot is an opportunity. So when people ask us, "Well, what markets do you participate in?" We say all of them. And it doesn't mean that we're trying to do too much. It doesn't mean that we're trying to boil the ocean. What it means is that whether it is fleet customers, whether it is multifamily, healthcare, retail shopping centers, hospitality, I mean, you can keep going, right? Schools, municipalities. The point is not as much about the vertical, but we play in all of them. It's about where is the infrastructure needed? So the infrastructure is first needed where people are adopting electric vehicles, right? That's pretty obvious. And there are some parts of the country that are adopting electric vehicles at a faster rate than others. And so our strategy is to really be installing where the demand is and where the need is. And we will follow the market. So as we see electric vehicle registrations grow in different parts of the country, our focus and our attention turns to those markets. So it's incredibly important that we are doing that because what you don't want to do is start installing EV infrastructure where it's not needed, where there's no demand, and then all of a sudden you've just put capital, which is limited, obviously, capital into an area where the charging station isn't being useful, right? So we need to make sure that we stay focused on putting chargers where they're useful.
Interesting. So you definitely are focusing on the usability, the reliability, and obviously the cost involved. It's not just this is happening in the market. Let's just go install Blink
Yeah.
everywhere. So
And
that's
by
great.
the way, Simi, what you just said is really, really important. One of our highest priorities in the company is EV charging reliability, right? Which doesn't often get the best press on the wild, right? But your listeners should know that this is not something that's being ignored. It's not something that's being swept under the rug. It is something that we focus on every single day to make sure that our chargers are up and running and that they're available when someone needs them.
Yeah, no, that's amazing for you to point out. I think just because I work in technology and there's a lot of platforms, I think the first thing is integration of the technology, the reliability, the usability, and most importantly, the sustainability without any issues, right? So I think it all eventually comes back to the core of can we trust this platform or the service, right? So I think that's really the way of handling things if you ever want to keep
Yeah,
scaling the way you
and
are.
by the way, you just touched on something that's actually interesting. You talk about sustainability. One of the things that I'll just mention is that Blink is super unique because we own and operate thousands of charging stations coast to coast, in addition to selling them. When a charging station has an issue with it, we will actually bring it back to our facility in Tempe, Arizona. We will refurbish it, repair it, and we will redeploy it to another location where we own those charging stations. So we throw away very little. So we often get asked, hey, what's your recyclability program and things of that nature. And one of the things I just want, you to know, your listeners to know, is that through this unique business model, there's very, very few charging stations that just get, tossed in the trash, right?
Yeah, no, I think that's amazing. I think it's important to also walk the talk, which is exactly what you all are doing. You're making yourself sustainable and also to promote sustainability. I think that's very critical, even for similar businesses to adapt. So, Michael, as we're talking, my first thought was we're talking about installing and the maintenance and the reliability, which is the current scenario. Do you think in the future the whole charging could actually become portable where someone could, and I could be completely envisioning this, but something with the size of my palm, and I could just use this to plug it in, just like we charge a phone? Do you think that's possible?
I would love to think that's possible. Maybe I'm thinking too narrowly, but I don't know. I think the challenge, Simi, is that there's just a lot of electricity that is required to do this. And so, what I can tell you, I think will happen is the chargers are going to continue to get faster and faster, right? So, especially with highway charging, superchargers, if you will, or what are called DC fast chargers. They're going to keep getting faster. The prices are going to keep falling. The technology in the car itself is going to keep getting better and better so that we can come very close to parity with the time it takes to put gas in your car. And that's what people are looking for.
Right. But what other innovative technologies are you looking forward to integrating in terms of making Blink better or in terms of just your hopes and dreams of making this more sustainable and accessible?
Yeah, there's a few. So one is there is a technology that we will be introducing in the next, 12 months or so, which is called plug and charge. So your listeners that own a Tesla and hook up to a supercharger, they're going to know exactly what I'm talking about. So Tesla's done a great job at this. And what it means is when I have a Tesla and I roll up to a supercharger, and I own one, by the way, I just plug it into that supercharger and the car and the charger authenticate. I don't need a credit card. I don't need an app. I don't need anything, right? I literally just plug it in, it starts charging, and it charges my credit card. So it's actually an easier experience than even putting gas in my car. So Blink is going to be rolling out that technology both on our level two charging stations, our DC fast charging stations, et cetera. The next one is energy management within the platform. So within our network platform, we are going to be introducing more, I should say, more advanced energy management systems. So what we have today currently is something called load management. And that is if I have limited electricity capacity at the facility, but I need a whole bunch of chargers, I can still install those chargers. And through software, I can control how much power goes to each of those stations, how much is distributed to each of them. So we are going to be kind of building upon that. And there will be more advanced energy management features coming in, things like integration with building management systems, what they call demand response technology. So the utility can kind of almost reach into the charger and throttle it back if there's just too much demand on the system. There's a lot of different things like that that are coming that are pretty exciting.
Yeah, that's very interesting. It seems very intentional too, in terms of all the energy management systems, the plug and play. It seems what I've constantly been hearing from you, it's very intentional. And
Yeah, and we think, and by the way, Simi, we think that the software piece of it is really going to be one of the big market differentiators, because you can kind of build a charger, right? But it's how is the charger controlled? What is the functionality associated with it? And those are going to be important. Those are going to be important aspects.
no, absolutely. And I've been reading a lot about cars and automobiles, as it's part of one of my industries. I spearhead from Tata, where I work. It's really interesting because every organization, every car company I've been reading about, they've been focusing and they're putting their bets on software development because they're concerned about the customer experience and obviously the sustainability value, but also the customer experiences, and not just, the car seats, but really how do they access their car, what is the experience, and also using the data to repeatedly to do better. It's almost like becoming the Fitbits which we use in healthcare. And I think every vertical lines of business are moving towards, how do we make sure we retain members, and how do you make sure that we address each of the touch point, which is what I'm constantly been hearing from you.
Yeah, and one quick example of that, I promise it's quick,
No, all
is
good.
understanding the performance of an individual charging station is really, really important. So, as an example, if I have a single charging station at a location and the platform is telling me, hey, this charging station is getting used constantly, that tells us we need another charging station there. So the data really does dictate for Blink where the demand is and where we need to quickly move to installing additional units.
No, I mean, I'm a big data fan. It's all about business intelligence, right? The more data we have, the more insights, the more actionable insights and actions we can take. So I love that you're very integrated into the whole data system. And Michael, you and I know, and some of the listeners may realize, that we are talking sometimes in the space of privilege, right? To own a electric car, to be able to buy Blink charging. And that's not what this platform is about. It's supposed to be accessible, sustainable. So we'd love to hear your thoughts on how is Blink Charging, one, engaging with local communities to, one, promote the benefits and create more awareness about sustainable practices, but also how do you make Blink Charging, and obviously that comes to the question, how do you make electric cars more accessible and affordable? But I would love to hear your thoughts because you've been in the industry way too long.
Let me start with the infrastructure side, and then we can talk about the vehicle side. So from the infrastructure side, we work with communities in a couple of different ways, especially on the multifamily side. So number one is we need to get this infrastructure in multifamily. So whether it is in areas where electric vehicle demand is high, or whether it is in underprivileged, disadvantaged communities, we are open to that as well, because we often look at these projects on a portfolio basis, and we know that the infrastructure needs to go into disadvantaged communities. And as long as we have what I'll call offsets to that, or projects that are going in that provide a more immediate return, we can work with those communities, those individual apartment buildings, et cetera, to get some infrastructure in there, to get the awareness level out there, and we're willing to invest in that. So that's one piece of it. And with that is providing awareness to these communities of the programs that are out there. There's a ton of money available, almost coast to coast, for installing EV infrastructure in disadvantaged communities. So it's about the awareness level, and it's about making sure that they understand that money's available and how we can use it most effectively. Then secondly, the vehicles themselves, right? So when we talk about how do we get adoption moving? How do we get more people in electric vehicles? It's all going to be the price point, right? And one of the things that is clearly happening is automakers across the industry are all introducing new vehicles to the market. And the industry recognizes that we've got to provide more affordable vehicles. So think of the Chevy Bolt, right? That's a great example. But there's going to be many, many examples that are going to be hitting the market in the next, year, 2 years, 3 years. So we're going to start to see adoption increase. We're going to start to see the price points come down, and we're going to start to see people buying these vehicles, not only new, but also on the secondary market, right, as used cars. And so the used car market, which people don't often think about, is also another means by which the price points are going to start coming down.
As you speak, I'm curious to also ask a question because my business mind can't stop chattering. Do you create any kind of product packaging, for example, Blink charging along with Hyundai Motors, and just give that as a package when a consumer is buying the car?
Those are programs that we would love to be involved in. There are some of those out there. We
Okay.
aren't really involved in. Think about buying like a Hyundai Ioniq 6 and there's a Blink charger in the trunk. We're not there yet, but if anybody from the Hyundai world's listening, we'd love it.
I think I'm giving a lot of business ideas with my comment, but I think that's great. But I think Blink charging is international. Are you all in India and Europe as well, right?
Yeah, so we actually have 7 offices across 5 continents. We have 2 facilities in India that are predominantly focused on manufacturing. So just a quick aside, our chargers, our level 2 chargers are actually assembled in the United States. So they start their life in India. They come over to the United States and they are final assembly at our facility in Bowie, Maryland. So they're built right here in the US. We have 3 different offices in Europe. So in total, we have chargers in about 25 countries globally now.
Okay, interesting. And are you planning to hit the markets in India and Europe, or these are just manufacturing at the moment?
No. The European offices are all sales and marketing. So we have thousands of chargers already in Europe. We plan to expand further on the continent. We're very, very strong in Belgium and the UK. We are growing our footprint in the Netherlands, and we are now exploring entry in Italy, Spain, etc. We also just opened a very small office in South Korea, and we have begun charger sales and installations in South Korea. And then India is predominantly manufacturing, but we do have a sales and marketing team there that is also taking advantage of the early, what is still early, market opportunities in India.
Oh, I love South Korea. I was there during the Sakura season in Japan, and then I went there. I just think people are extremely healthy as it is. They hike a lot. Their clothing is amazing. It's less expensive, but it's really good. But I'm really fascinated to see how even India, with a 1.4 billion population at some point, obviously considering social determinants of health and other factors, how will they become more sustainable and how will they start democratizing the whole EVs and the charging? And it'll be very interesting to see how that curve is going to happen.
Yeah, and it's going to start. It's already starting with the 2-wheeler and 3-wheeler market in India.
Well, I think I'll be very fascinated to see those tuk-tuks or the auto rickshaws to be
electric.
Or even like even if it's carts, like those are being EV charged. I mean, that'll be
I think it's coming.
Like Jetson's coming true, right? They're like, but Michael, so considering the evolving regulatory landscape, we've covered the private sectors, we've covered the different lines of businesses, and obviously government, I think, plays a huge role in terms of policy and regulating. So how do you manage your collaborations with government officials and regulatory bodies to contribute and really to make this more sustainable and affordable?
So Simi, I could really go on my soapbox on this one. It's kind of a loaded question.
You have all the time, Michael. Yeah.
So look, we talk to government officials all the time. I mean, in fact, I'm tomorrow flying to a city to go meet with several governors right across the country. So this is something that we do on a regular basis. We talk to governors, we talk to congressmen, we talk to senators, we talk to their staffs, we talk to the White House. And it's all about policy. It's all about what makes the most sense to push forward this industry. Now, and I will get on my soapbox here a little bit because I have a platform, which is one of the most unfortunate things that is happening in the electric vehicle industry right now is the politicalization of it. So you have this kind of crazy divide that's happening, that somehow the BEV industry is a democratic issue, and you have kind of the other side pushing back on it. And I'm not going to say, by the way, what party I'm affiliated with personally. All right.
Yeah.
So the thing is that the market is going to decide, right? People, individual consumers are going to decide what is best for them. And that's just the beauty of our country. And are internal combustion engines going away anytime soon completely? No, they're not. Right. And there's a role for them. But is there also a meaningful role for battery electric vehicles? Of course. And it's going to happen And it's going to happen without a ton of market intervention. It's going to happen as new vehicles hit the market. Consumers are faced with a choice. And if you live in California like we do, and when gas is $6 or $7 a gallon, that starts to sway people's choices, right? So I would love to see the parties come together on this thing to let it be a market-driven but supported adoption, because it does make sense. So I
Now,
could keep going on this one, but I'll stop there.
I think it's very critical, Michael, because I work in the food insecurity space. And back in the day, because of the great crisis that happened, the foods that were subsidized were corn, wheat, and soy. So now when we go to the grocery store, blueberries are $6, right? And Fruit Loops are $2. Obviously, people, even if they come from a source of privilege, if they have two kids and three kids, whatever, they're going to be opting for something more easy, something which can fit their back wallet. So then they start choosing what's more affordable, right? So I think, and eventually, and I think the hard part is if people start growing their own produce or start going to their local farmers market and start shifting the demand, then everything caves in. And I think that's the power of people. And I, even in my own talks, I tell people it's not about the government changing the policy. And yes, they do need to do that. They are accountable. But from an individual perspective, if we all take our own responsibility, accountability, and start making that shift, eventually the accumulation of that will force them to do what is right. So I think it's a similar kind of an example right here as people realize the gas prices are high, the climate impact, the impact on their own health, and they start moving towards EV, then more people do it, the more cars are produced for EV, and
And
then
by the way, then the costs fall, right? Because
exactly.
we're producing at volume and at scale, the component costs fall, and all of a sudden, these things become more affordable for everyone, and then it becomes self-sustaining. It's like an analogy of what happened, like with the organic food business and everything else, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It's simple mathematics, but I know humans make it very complicated. So if anyone's listening,
Yes.
please help us. But Michael, this brings us to a last question. Three takeaways for the future of sustainability, what would they be?
Number one, every time you put a charging station in, you're enabling someone to either use, consider buying an electric vehicle, and that in and of itself is certainly contributing. The second is, I would say, this doesn't have to be big, and it doesn't have to be complicated, and it doesn't have to be too expensive. So what we often tell customers is start small. One charging station's fine, right? You can always build off of that. So that's a second thing to consider. Dip your toe in the water. The third thing would be simply, I think, what we talked about at the very end, which is forget about the political nature of this thing. Forget about all the press that you see, whether it be positive, negative. It doesn't matter, right? The cars are coming. These things are going to be produced at scale. They're going to become more affordable. They're going to become attractive to consumers. And we're going to see electric vehicle adoption increase. Now, is it going to increase at the pace with which the original forecasts were? Maybe, maybe not. It doesn't matter, because whether we need 30 million charging stations by 2030, or we need 20 million, it's still a big number. So we're marching toward that.
So Michael, thank you so much for your insights and your time. Such a pleasure to have you here.
Thanks, Simi. Enjoyed it.
Thank you for listening. This is Health Forward Podcast, and I am your host, Smriti Kirbanandi.